This is the Relic Radio Show, old-time radio entertainment still standing the test of time, from RelicRadio.com. This is the Relic Radio Show. Welcome back. Thanks for joining me this Tuesday. We'll begin our hour of radio drama with The Big Story. We'll hear The Case of the Ambitious Hobo, their episode from December 17th, 1947. After that, it's The Screen Guild Theater and Stand By for Action, their story from March 8th, 1943.
The Cigarettes present The Big Story.
Say, Idaho.
Yeah, kid?
My back feels broken riding on the floor of this empty boxcar.
You'll get used to it, kid. You'll get used to
it. Oh, no, not me. Maybe you're going to go on being a hobo all your life, but not me.
Huh?
I got big ideas.
What kind of big ideas?
I'm going to be a big shot someday, Idaho.
Big shot?
Yeah. When I do, I'm going to ride the cushions in a Pullman car. First class.
The Big Story. Another in a thrilling series based on true experiences of newspaper reporters. Tonight, to Russ Wilson of the Des Moines Tribune goes the Pall Mall Award for The Big Story. Four notes that are alike, and one that is outstanding. And of America's leading cigarettes, one is outstanding. The longer, finer cigarette in the distinguished red package, Pall Mall.
Ladies and gentlemen, have you noticed how many of your friends have changed to Pall Mall? There's a reason. Pall Mall famous cigarettes.
Good to look at.
Good to feel.
Good to taste.
And good to smoke.
Yes, Pall Malls are good to look at, good to feel, good to taste, and good to smoke. For Pall Mall's greater length of traditionally fine, mellow tobaccos filters the smoke of this longer, finer cigarette. Gives you that smoothness, mildness, and satisfaction no other cigarette offers you.
Four notes that are alike, and one that is outstanding. And of America's leading cigarettes, one is outstanding.
Pall Mall famous cigarettes. Outstanding.
And they are mild.
Now the exciting and authentic story of the case of the ambitious hobo.
You are Russ Wilson, and right now you hang your hat in the city room of a California newspaper. But actually, you're from out where the tall corn grows, in Iowa. For years, you worked for the Des Moines Tribune as a crime reporter. And it was with the Tribune that you finally nailed down your big story. It really began some 250 miles south of Des Moines, in a little home in Kansas City.
Freddie,
being a burden to you.
The last time you left home, you were gone 2 years. I never even knew where you were or what you did. I worry about you, son. You're only a boy.
That's the trouble. That's what everybody thinks. Everyone around here still calls me Babyface. Babyface Freddie Bell. But I'm no kid anymore, see? Even if I look it. I'm 21. And I can't just sit around here and watch you work to support me.
Son, if you stay home, there are plenty of jobs.
Not my kind of jobs. I want to be rich, famous. I want to own a big car, a big house, have 10 suits of clothes. I want to make sure you never have to work again, Mom. I want people to turn around and look at me when I walk down the street and hear them say, "There goes Freddie Bell, the big shot."
I wish your father was alive. I wish he was here to advise you. I don't know what to do. I can only say I think you're making a terrible mistake.
Oh, no, I'm not. It's like in those stories you used to read me when I was a kid. I've got to go out and seek my fortune. You wouldn't stand in my way, would you, Mom?
No. No, son. If that's what you want, I won't try to stop.
Oh, now you're talking. Mom, I hate to ask you this, but I'm going to need some money to get started on my trip. How about that $20 you got saved up for that washing machine you were going to buy? Oh, I know it's all you have, and I feel like a heel asking you for it, honest, but...
You don't have to ask me for it, Freddie. It's yours.
Daylight in an hour, Idaho. When's this here freight train get to Des Moines?
This is a highball freight, kid. She's been hitting high iron ever since we jumped aboard at Kansas City. We're in the outskirts of Des Moines now. We've played in luck.
Yeah, why, Idaho?
Brakeman hasn't been around to bother us the whole trip. Once we hit the yard, she'll slow down with... drop off this boxcar.
And after that?
After that, I'll take you to the hobo jungle and introduce you to some of the other bulls riding this territory.
Well, it can't come too soon for me. My back's broken riding on this boxcar floor. Someday when I get rich, Idaho, I'm going to ride the cushions on the Pullman cars. First class.
You think you're going to be a big shot, huh, kid?
I got my mind set on it.
Yeah, and stay away from the road. Don't go getting cinders in your blood, train whistles ringing in your ears like I did. It ain't the life for a kid like you.
You expect to be a bum all your life, Idaho?
Not a bum, kid. A hobo.
What's the difference?
Plenty. Bum's a tramp. He won't work. He'll steal. Hobo's different. He'll work if he has to. And he's got respect for the law. And... hey, kid.
Yeah?
Trouble coming up. The brakeman's coming.
Where?
He's on the catwalk 2 cars ahead. Get away from the door, kid. That brakeman will be on the roof of this boxcar in a minute.
Oh, what of it?
If he sees us, he'll throw us off this train.
Oh, no, he won't, Idaho.
He won't.
You heard me.
What do you mean, kid?
I mean this, Idaho.
Where'd you get that knife?
KC. A Bowie knife, they call it. And if that brakie sticks his head through this car door, I'll cut it off for him.
Kid, wait a minute. What's come over you? Put that knife away.
Oh, shut up, Idaho. I'll take care of this.
You shut up. That brakie's on the roof of this car now.
If he looks in, I'll shove this knife right through him. Oh. He's gone.
Yeah. He's gone, kid. Now you're gone.
Hey, Idaho, what's the idea? What do you think you're doing with that iron bar?
Get off this train, kid.
Oh, wait a minute, Idaho.
You had me fooled with that baby face of yours. Now I know what kind of a big shot you want to be. You want to be a big shot like Dillinger or Legs Diamond.
Yeah, what of it?
You're a killer, kid. I don't want to be traveling around with a killer. We part company here and now. Get off this freight, kid.
Why, I'll let you have this knife right through
you. You try anything, kid, and you'll get this iron bar right across your face. Go on, jump.
Okay, Idaho. I'll jump. But I'll be seeing you. Hey, mister, give me a lift.
Maybe. Let me get a good look at you first. Don't like to pick up strangers when it's dark like this unless... Why, you're only a kid. Okay, hop in.
Gee, thanks.
What are you doing outside of Des Moines at 5 a.m?
Oh, just hitchhiking around.
Got the itchy foot. I had it too before I got married. My name's Carl Andrews.
I'm Freddie Fell.
I'm glad to know you, Freddie.
It sure is a beautiful car.
Yep, brand new, and it's got every gadget in the book. Custom made, too.
Is it your car?
Mine. Oh, no. What would I be doing owning a car like this? I work for a garage, just delivering the car to the guy who owns it. He's a bank president in Des Moines.
This all belongs to a big shot, huh?
That's right.
This is the kind of car I'm going to drive.
Well, I wish you luck, kid. I hope you do someday.
I'm not talking about someday, pal. I mean now.
Huh?
I'm going to start right in being a big shot now.
What are you talking about?
This.
Well, I'll be... Put that knife away, kid.
Pull over to the side of the road, pal. I'm taking over.
Have you gone crazy?
Stop the car and pull over to the side. Or... do I have to carve you up?
You wouldn't dare use that knife. Not a kid like you.
Oh, wouldn't I, pal? Wouldn't I? I've been waiting for a chance like this.
You're bluffing, kid. There's a state police barracks down the highway. And... no. No, kid, no.
You asked for it. Give me that wheel. Give me that.
You, Russ Wilton of the Des Moines Tribune, get the murder flash shortly after dawn. You hightail it to the scene, and when you get there, you find the usual crowd. Radio patrolmen, detectives, deputy coroner, just plain citizens. And Officer James Hodge of the Iowa State Bureau of Investigation. You take a long look at the body, and then you manage to get Officer Hodge over to one side.
Any identification on the dead man yet, Hodge?
It's a garage mechanic named Carl Andrews.
Anything else?
What do you mean?
Any more information I can use for a story?
Look, Wilson, according to everything I read, newspaper reporters and private detectives are real bright guys. They always capture the criminal single-handed. Professional cop's just a dope with no clue if he saw one, so, why don't you get your own information,
Frankly, I wouldn't know how. I've never captured a criminal in my life.
Well, you probably think you could.
I know very well I couldn't. What's the matter, Hodge? Got a big hate on reporters? One of us spelled your name wrong or something?
All right. So I got out of bed on the wrong side this morning. What do you want to know?
Just the regular stuff. The motive for this murder, for instance. Robbery, I suppose.
You suppose wrong. Andrews had $50 on him. Killer didn't even touch it.
That's funny. If the killer wasn't interested in money, what did he want?
You figure that out, reporter. Let me know.
How about revenge? Maybe Andrews was riding with someone he knew, a personal enemy.
Unlikely. Check with the people in Andrews' garage. They said he didn't have an enemy in the world.
Then you haven't got an awful lot to go on, have you?
Enough to catch the killer.
What?
Fingerprints.
Fingerprints? Why? Well,
I know. Just like in detective stories, only sometimes killers really do leave fingerprints. This one did. He was smart enough to wipe them off the steering wheel, but in his hurry to make a getaway, forgot to wipe them off the door handle. We'll probably know who he is within a few hours.
City desk, Russ Wilson. I'm calling from headquarters. Those fingerprints belong to a kid named Freddie Bell. He served a term in jail out west for armed robbery. Police expect to pick him up any hour now.
But the police don't pick him up. A day passes. Two. Three. The manhunt hits high gear. Goes out of the state and nationwide. You follow it close. Write story after story. The Tribune is flooded with tips. You track them down. Find them worthless. And then, days later, when the authorities are just about ready to concede a clean getaway, you get a phone call.
Hello?
Is this Russ Wilson?
Yeah?
I've been reading those stories you wrote on the Carl Andrews murder case, and I got a tip on the killer.
Who's this?
Never mind. You want that tip on the killer, or don't you?
Yes, I do.
Okay. Meet me at the Hobo's Jungle near the freight yards, midnight tonight.
The Hobo's Jungle?
That's right. And Wilson?
Yeah?
Just a word of warning. Don't talk to the cops. And come along.
We'll be back in just a moment with tonight's big story. But first, a word from Cy Harris.
Ladies and gentlemen, have you noticed how many of your friends have changed to pell-mell?
Four notes that are alike, and one that is outstanding. And of America's leading cigarette, one is outstanding. The longer, finer cigarette in the distinguished red package, pell-mell. Good to look at.
Good to feel.
Good to taste.
And good to smoke.
Yes, Pall Mells are good to look at, good to feel, good to taste, and good to smoke. For Pall Mells, greater length of traditionally fine, mellow tobaccos filters the smoke of this longer, finer cigarette. Gives you that smoothness, mildness, and satisfaction no other cigarette offers you.
Four notes that are alike, and one that is outstanding. And of America's leading cigarettes, one is outstanding.
Pall Mall famous cigarettes. Outstanding.
And they are mild. Now back to our narrator, Bob Sloan, and tonight's big story.
You, Russ Wilson of the Des Moines Tribune, have a date with a mysterious voice on the telephone. Your rendezvous, a hobo jungle near the freight yards at midnight. Your mission, to find a killer. When you cross the tracks in the darkness and head for the clearing they call the hobo's jungle, you're scared plenty. Somewhere in the distance, you hear a train. And right now, you wish you were on that train. You wish you were anywhere but where you are. But you keep on walking. And finally, you hit the jungle itself, where the hobos camp. You see the ashes of the cooking fires, bits of cast-off clothing, and tin cans littered about. And you keep on walking.
Wilson?
Oh,
Hello. Oh, it's so dark here.
You're right on time.
Who are you?
Your name's Jones, Idaho Jones. I'm a hobo.
Why did you want me to meet you out here?
I figured it was safer for me. If I met you in town, it'd be too easy for you to turn me over to the cops if you didn't believe my story.
I see. You said over the phone that you had a tip on the Carl Andrews murder.
Yeah.
What's the tip?
I seen the killer about 7 o'clock this evening.
You saw Freddie Bell?
Yep. Baby face and all.
Where?
Right here where you're standing.
You mean he's right here in Des Moines?
He was.
How'd you spot him?
Long about dark tonight, me and another beau started to burn some kindling, to cook up some coffee and slum. I remember it had started to rain. My friend was telling about other hobo jungle things.
You know, Idaho, the best one I ever seen was off the DL&W in here, Scranton. It was spilled against the clay bank to keep out the wind, and there was...
Whitey, hold it.
What's the matter, Idaho?
Somebody's coming.
Yeah.
I wonder if you two guys could deal me in, little Stew. Oh, it's you, Idaho.
Yeah, it's me, Freddy.
Who's this baby face, Idaho?
Freddy Bell. Knifed a guy to death near here a couple of weeks ago.
Look, Idaho, I didn't do it.
That ain't what the Des Moines papers say, kid.
They're lying. I tell you, I didn't.
Don't lie to me, kid. I know you did it.
How do you know? What makes you think I did it?
Carl Andrews was murdered at 4:30, like this reporter Wilson in the Tribune says. And at 4 o'clock, you jumped the freight we was traveling right about the place where Andrews was killed. You were carrying a knife, and you were in a killing mood. Well?
Okay. So I knifed him. So I'm on the lam. Look, guys, I'm taking the next freight south for Kansas City. All I want's a little stew.
Beat it, kid.
But I'm a hobo like the two of you.
Oh, no, you're not, kid. You're a killer. Now, beat it. And if you're going to KC, don't try to go by freight.
What do you mean?
He means not to ride the rods of boxcars. That's hobo law. Jungle law. If you're going to Kansas City, you'll have to hit the highway. It's rides by car.
Wait a minute, wise guys. You can't tell me how to travel.
Can't we, kid?
If any hobo catches you on a freight, he'll throw you off the train. That's the law. We don't want any killers riding the rails. Brings the cops down too quick.
The highway's about a mile east of here. Now beat it, kid. Get going. That's the story, Mr. Wilson. That's the last I saw of Babyface Bell. But it looked to me like he was still carrying a knife and still figuring on using it.
Did you call me right after he left?
Yeah.
That means he got about a 5-hour start. You think he's heading for Kansas City?
Right.
Why did you tip me off to this, Idaho?
Well, when the cops find out Freddie Bell's a hobo, they'll raid this jungle, close it up. I figured if I tipped them off through you, they might let us hobos alone, maybe. You see what I mean, Wilson?
Sure, Idaho, sure. I see what you mean. Come on, I want you to tell this story to a friend of mine. All set with those pictures, Hodge?
Yep. Got 7 different photographs here on my desk. Every one of them out of the Rogues Gallery, with the names blanked out.
And Freddie Bell's picture is one of them.
Right. This hobo picks it, we'll know he's not talking through his hat. We'll know that he's seen the right man. Yeah. Much as I hate to admit it, this is a good idea of yours, reporter.
Thanks. I'll let him in now. Money, Idaho.
What's this all about, Wilson?
Take it easy. We just want to see whether you can pick Freddie Bell from these pictures.
Go ahead, Idaho. Pick it out. Which one of these pictures is Freddie Bell?
This here one. This picture, the third from the left. That's Freddy Bell. I'd know him anywhere.
Well, Jim?
He's right, reporter. That does it.
Good. What now?
First, I'm going to send out a general alarm. Notify all road closing police between here and Kansas City.
Fine. That'll give me a chance to phone in a lead. I can just make my addition. After that, where do we go from here?
For a ride along the highway to Kansas City.
Excuse me, ma'am. I'm on my way to Kansas City, hitchhiking. I'm hungry. I wonder if you could spare me a meal.
Why, it's a shame. Nice-looking boy like you going hungry. Come in, come in.
Oh, gee, thanks, ma'am. You're swell. You remind me of my mother.
Did you notify the police immediately after you heard that Freddie Bell was in this area, Mrs. Henshaw?
Oh, yes, Mr. Hodge. But I don't believe that this boy who had a meal right here in my house was the killer at all.
Why don't you believe it, Mrs. Henshaw?
Why, he seemed like a nice boy, and he had such a kind face.
Chances on a ride in your truck, driver.
Well, I don't know. We're not supposed to take any riders. Where you going?
Kansas City.
Well, you look like a nice kid, and you're a long way from home. Come ahead. Hop in.
Where did you pick up this kid in your truck, driver?
Right outside of St. Joe, Mr. Hodge. When the state troopers put up that roadblock and looked into my truck, the kid was gone.
Well, that's that. Let's go, Hodge.
If you ask me, Mr. Wilson, you two are barking up the wrong tree.
Are we? Why?
Why, that kid was clean cut, a regular fella. He didn't look anything like a killer to me.
Let me in, Mom. Let me in.
Freddy.
Shut the door quick.
Freddy, the police were here. They told me about what you'd done.
Look, I haven't got much time, Mom. Cook up something for me to eat. Something to take along. Sandwiches, anything. I got to get some clothes and get out of here in a hurry.
Freddy, why did you do it? Why did you
do it? Will you stop gabbing and get busy? I'm on the lam, see?
Freddy.
They're after me, breathing on my neck.
Freddy, where are you going? Where can you go?
I'm
going
to get me a job somewhere. Someplace where they won't look for me. With the railroad, maybe. Working on a section gang.
Don't do it, son. Give yourself up.
Have you gone nuts?
But you've got to give yourself up. You killed a man. You're a murderer.
Yeah. Ain't that something, Mom? You're the mother of a big shot now. A big shot like Blake Stein, Dillon, to the rest of them. I got my picture in the papers. Reporters writing stories about me. A real public enemy. Okay now, Mom. Get me that grub. I gotta beat it.
Still following the trail, you and Hodge check with the railroads and find that they're hiring section gangs at Liberty, Missouri, about 20 miles out of Kansas City. On a chance, you show up at the employment shack, and sure enough, the timekeeper tells you he's hired a new man. And just as you walk out in the freight yard, you see Babyface Freddy Bell. There's a hotshot freight train coming through, southbound. And Jim Hodge draws his gun and yells,
"Hey, you, Bell! Come in with your hands up!"
"Oh, yeah? Try and get me!"
"Hodge, he's making a run for it. He's going to try and catch that freight."
"He's not going to make it." Okay, Bell. Try these bracelets on. For size.
I could have made it. I could have made it, Steve.
Why didn't you, baby face? Afraid he might have gotten you with a second shot?
I.
A lot different when you're on the receiving end, isn't it, kid? All right, let's go, Wilson.
Right.
We get the flyer back tomorrow, aren't we? Hurry.
The flyer? Ain't that a Pullman?
That's right, baby face. Why?
That's funny. That's real funny.
What's so funny?
When I was riding the boxcars, I swore that someday I'd be a big shot and ride the Pullman first class. Here I am, a big shot with my picture in all the papers. And ride a Pullman car first class. Just as I said I would. Yeah.
In just a moment, we'll read you a telegram from Russ Wilson with the final outcome of tonight's big story. Pall Mall Famous Cigarettes. Good to look at.
Good to feel.
Good to taste.
And good to smoke.
Yes, Pall Malls are good to look at, good to feel, good to taste, and good to smoke. Four notes that are alike, and one that is outstanding. And of America's leading cigarettes, one is outstanding. The longer, finer cigarette in the distinguished red package. Pall Mall Famous Cigarettes. Outstanding.
And they are mild.
Now we read you that telegram from Russ Wilson of the Des Moines Tribune.
Youthful killer in tonight's big story was brought to trial, convicted of murder, and sentenced to life imprisonment in the Iowa State Penitentiary. 10 years later, he made a daring escape from prison, but after several weeks at liberty, he voluntarily returned to jail and is now serving out his sentence. Many thanks for tonight's Pall Mall Award.
Thank you, Mr. Wilson. The makers of Pall Mall Famous Cigarettes are proud to have named you the winner of the Pall Mall $500 Award for notable service in the field of journalism.
Listen again next week, same time, same station, when Pall Mall Famous Cigarettes will present another big story. A big story from the pages of the Nashville Banner, byline Marshall Morgan. A big story about two penniless parents and a reporter who saw to it that two children got what they wanted for Christmas.
The Big Story is produced by Bernard J. Proctor and directed by Harry Ingram, with music by Vladimir Stilinski. Tonight's program was written by Max Ehrlich. Your narrator was Bob Sloan, and George Petrie played the part of Russ Wilson. All names in tonight's story, except that of Mr. Wilson, were fictitious, but the dramatization was based on a true and authentic case. This is Ernest Chappell speaking for the makers of Pall Mall Famous Cigarettes.
Lady Esther presents the Screen Guild Players. Guild play tonight, Stand By for Action. The starring players...
This is Charles Lott.
This is Brian Donlevy.
And this is Chester Morris.
Tonight, Lady Esther presents the Screen Guild players in Stand By for Action, starring Charles Lawton as Admiral Stephen Thomas, Brian Donlevy as Lieutenant Commander Roberts, and Chester Morris as Lieutenant Masterman. This is a radio adaptation of the Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer picture Stand By for Action, having its first showing in the principal cities of the United States. Stand By for Action. We'll be right back. On December 7th, 1941, out of unsuspecting skies, a day of infamy dawned. And in those early months after Pearl Harbor, while the war still seemed far off to most Americans, the Navy carried on as the nation's first line with whatever tools were at hand. Our play tonight is about a destroyer, the USS Warren, brought back from a ship's graveyard and recommissioned to serve her country in its neediest hour. It is the story, too, of the Warren's officers. Lieutenant Commander Roberts, commanding the Warren, of Lieutenant Masterman, Commander Roberts' executive officer, and of Admiral Stephen Thomas, who recommissioned the Warren.
By authority of the Secretary of the Navy, contained in orders of May the 21st, 1942, I hereby recommission the USS Warren in the Naval Service of the United States and deliver her to her commanding officer. Mr. Roberts, the USS Warren is placed in commission and is delivered to you, sir.
I accept command, sir.
Officers and men, your ship, the Warren, is now commissioned by the United States Navy to fight our enemies. You make up its crew, regulars, reservists, recruits. As you pull together, as you become a smoothly functioning machine, as through your spirit you make this ship live, so will our country live. For the time we must fight this generation's war, partly with last generation's ships, the Warren is old, called back from its honorable retirement to fight again, but it is a glorious ship with a great history. There was another old ship in the United States Navy practically falling apart. She fought an action with a brand new blue ribbon frigate. When she was shot to pieces, on fire, dismasted, the captain of the enemy frigate hailed her to ask if she had struck her colors. Her answer to that question has been the number one watchword of the American Navy for 150 years. You may remember her name. Bonham Richard. Captain John Paul Jones, a farmer's son, commanded. Her answer was, I have not yet begun to fight.
Well, Masterman, you know, we've accomplished a lot in the past few weeks. The Warren's beginning to shake down now. She's becoming a warship, and you couldn't want a better crew.
You're being a little optimistic, sir.
Mr. Masterman, there have been a couple of times when I thought I detected a slight flaw in your schooling.
Well, if you mean I'm not a graduate of the Pollyanna School, you're right.
I don't know what they taught you at Harvard, but the Navy teaches a man to do the best possible job with whatever tools are at hand.
I suppose that's from John Paul Jones, too, sir.
No. That's from Martin J. Roberts.
Beg your pardon, sir. The radio operator's instructions were to show you this message at once, sir. It's very important.
Thank you. Well, Mr. Masterman, this is no longer a shakedown cruise. We're ordered to join an eastbound convoy out of Pearl Harbor at noon tomorrow, latitude 2330 north, longitude 14320 west. How far do you make it?
About 600 miles, sir.
Well, that means we'll have to do 25 knots for 24 hours.
I hope the engines hold together, sir.
Check that position and put her on the course to the rendezvous, Mr. Masterman.
It's a pretty long haul, sir, 25 knots in the sea.
We'll make it. We've got to make it. This is an order I've got in my hand, and the commanding officer of the convoy is Stephen Thomas, United States Navy. Old Iron Pants himself.
There's a floating object one point on the port bow, sir. It looks like a lifeboat, sir.
Why, it is a lifeboat. There might be survivors, sir.
Yes, there might be a Jap sub hiding his periscope behind the lifeboat. Circle it at full speed.
Aye, aye, sir.
Yes, there are survivors, all right. Mr. Masterman, stop all engines.
Stop all engines, sir?
Yes.
Well, I thought we were under orders to speed to the convoy and that orders must be followed to the letter.
Mr. Masterman, this is the exception that proves the rule. There's a man in that boat that looks pretty well used up.
Yes, sir. Stop all engines, Mr. Lindsay.
Stop all engines, sir.
Stand by on deck to receive lifeboat on port side. Come on, men. We can't stay here all day. You've got to get the men aboard. What's going on down there in that lifeboat?
Well, sir, it looks like we made a hole.
Made a... What are you talking about? What do you mean?
There are two women in the lifeboat and a whole school of babies.
Babies?
Yes, sir. Kids, sir. Minnow size.
Well, what... This is impossible, Masterman. Women and children aboard a destroyer? Why, that... Well, looks like we've got quite a job ahead of us.
Oh, I'm sure you can handle it with your theory of doing the best possible job with whatever tools are at hand, sir.
What? Oh, yeah. You're quite right. And I know just the man for the job of looking after those babies.
You. Me? Oh, now, wait a minute, Captain.
Mr. Masterman, that's an order. Come hell or a high water, and you'll probably run into both on this assignment. Resume standard speed, Mr. Lindsay.
Aye, aye, sir.
It looks like some of you men will have to take care of more than one baby. Put all the little ladies on the port side and all the little gentlemen on the starboard. We'll stow them onto a bunk and rig netting around them so they don't tumble out.
Yes.
And tell the cook to make up some warm milk. They'll quiet down once they have some chow. Where are the women, James?
Right over there, sir, by that bar.
Thanks. Guess I better take care of them next.
Yes, sir.
I'm going to have some of the officers double up so that you ladies can use their rooms.
Oh, thank you very much, Lieutenant. You make a wonderful foster father.
Yes. Well, aren't you ladies a little young to be the mothers of 20 babies?
Poor children. They're evacuees from the maternity hospital in Honolulu on their way to the mainland.
Oh.
Our ship was separated from the convoy, and they got us at night.
I see. Well, I've heard of three men in a boat, but two women and 20 babies.
Is there a doctor on board?
No, I'm sorry. Only a pharmacist's mate.
Oh, but I...
Well, now, don't worry. We'll take good care.
Well, I'll have to stay and take care of
We'll take care of your friend. I'll see that she's moved at once.
But I can't leave her. She needs help desperately.
Oh, I'm afraid I must insist. You're practically out on your feet yourself. Now, come with me. Jenks.
Yes, sir?
Take the other lady to Mr. Martin's room.
Masterman, I've been hearing glowing reports on your proficiency in the care and feeding of infants. That's very gratifying.
Oh, thank you, sir. Too bad that you and these other gentlemen are strangers to the soft caress of a baby's hand.
Hmm?
The magic of a dimpled smile. The charm of triangular trousers. You have no idea what you're missing.
Well, I guess we can guess. How's the condition of the women we picked up?
Not too good, sir. I sent the pharmacist's mate to look at them and see what he could do.
Pharmacist Nate Miller reporting, sir.
Yes, Miller?
Excuse me, sir, but we're having a baby.
Where are they? What? Who?
The woman we took aboard, sir.
Well, there were two women.
Huh. Well, one of them about to become a mother, sir. The one in Mr. Martin's room.
Now, Miller, she can't do that. Now, wait a minute. You can't permit such a thing to happen aboard this ship. It's strictly against regulations.
Well, perhaps if you read the Navy regulations to the lady, Miller...
What?
I don't think there's time, sir. And besides, I'm only a pharmacist's mate.
Well, surely John Paul Jones must have had something to say concerning a moment like this, Captain.
Yeah.
If you could only remember what it was.
Oh. Mr. Masterman.
Yes, sir?
Now.
Wait a minute, sir. Look, I'm a ship's officer, yes. Not a stork.
That's right. You're the executive officer, Mr. Masterman. I don't know what John Paul Jones might have said, but... Navy regulations say that all matters pertaining to the ship's company properly fall under the jurisdiction of the executive officer. Now, this lady, through force of circumstance, is technically a member of the ship's company. So, execute, Mr. Masterman. Execute.
Well, the launching's complete, sir.
Mm-hmm.
Mother and baby are in perfect shape, but the crew's about to have a nervous breakdown. Why, you'd think each one of them was the father.
What?
It's a boy, sir.
Well done, Masterman.
Strictly according to regulation, sir.
Uh-huh. By the way, the convoy's been sighted on the starboard bow.
I wonder how the Admiral's lumbago is acting.
Not too well. He's already signaled for an explanation of our being an hour late arriving. I'd like to know what he would say when he gets my answer.
Message from the Warren, Admiral.
Well, read it, Dudley, read it.
Yes, sir. Have on board 25 civilian survivors of torpedoed vessel proceeding from Honolulu to San Francisco.
Hmm.
Rescued persons number, 2 women, 20 babies, and 2 seamen. Report
yes,
one...
Yes, but 2 women, 20 children, and 2 seamen are 24 survivors.
The message continues, sir.
Yes?
Report one of the rescued ladies became a mother after being taken on board.
Hmm?
In absence of doctor, carpenter's mate officiated. Request your concurrence. That's the end of the message, sir.
Well, I'm surprised at Roberts, permitting such irregularity. I should have been informed of the entire affair. It's completely without precedent. Boy or girl?
It doesn't say, sir.
It doesn't say what kind of a report is that, leaving out the most important detail.
Here's another message from the Warren, sir. Oh. It's a boy, sir.
It's a boy. It's a boy. Signal the Warren. Well done, Warren.
And so the curtain falls on the first act of Stand By for Action, starring Charles Laughton, Brian Donlevy, and Chester Morris. Before the curtain rises on the second act, a word from your hostess, Lady Esther.
I recently met a girl who has a tomboy job in an aircraft plant. Now, tomboy jobs are jobs given to girls who are small enough to climb over the wings of a plane or to connect wires in hard-to-reach places. And this girl likes it. She says it's fun. But she was awfully discouraged for a while about the effect all the grease and dirt was having on her skin. Even though she gave her skin its usual care, it just wasn't enough. She said she'd never seen her skin look so sallow and dull. So, she did a very sensible thing. She changed her method of beauty care. She changed to Lady Esther four-purpose face cream. And she's so happy now. For even though her skin takes more punishment than ever, it's actually more attractive than ever. But that's what every woman has a right to expect from a cream that takes care of not one, but 4 essential needs of the skin. Why, every time you use Lady Esther face cream, it's like giving your skin a whole beauty treatment. For here's what happens. First, and this is so important, you get your skin really clean. You whisk away every last trace of grease and dirt. Second, Lady Esther face cream softens your skin, helps relieve the dryness that often causes little lines. Third, it helps nature refine the pores. And fourth, it leaves a perfect non-sticky base for powder. So why not change to this one cream for the complete care of your skin? See how different Lady Esther face cream is from any cream you've ever used. How it leaves your skin so radiantly fresh that the very years seem to lift away and you suddenly look more youthful and a lot more attractive.
And now the curtain rises on the second act of Stand By for Action, starring Charles Laughton as Admiral Stephen Thomas, Brian Donlevy as Lieutenant Commander Roberts, and Chester Morris as Lieutenant Masterman. As the convoy, carrying its load of women, children, and wounded men, steams eastward across the Pacific, we join Admiral Thomas aboard his flagship, the cruiser Chattanooga.
Gentlemen, I give a month's pay to see Masterman surrounded by all those babies.
Masterman?
Oh, yes, he's my ex-junior aide. He's quite a fella. Always made me feel a little uncomfortable, as if my necktie weren't on straight or something.
What's the matter with him, sir?
Nothing that a cruise on the Warren and a bunch of babies won't cure.
Another message from the Warren, sir.
Well, read it, Dudley.
Yes, sir. Second lady passenger about to become mother.
Hmm?
Condition unfavorable. Request concurrence in medical advice.
Now, look here, Dudley. This sort of thing must stop. I'm fighting a war, not running a lying-in hospital.
Aye, aye, sir. Shall I transmit that message to the Warren, sir?
Certainly not. Well, Dr. Stone, go on. Say something.
Say what?
You heard the message. The Warren wants medical advice.
Well, sir, offhand, I don't know exactly what to say.
Stone, are you or are you not a doctor?
I am a naval surgeon, sir, not a baby specialist. Now, if the woman had only broken her neck or something more in my line...
Stone, she is having a baby. The Warren is waiting.
Well, I'll have to look it up.
What shall I tell the Warren, sir?
Tell the Warren to delay everything. My senior surgeon is reading a book.
Aye, aye, sir.
Dudley?
Yes, sir.
Any word from the Warren?
No, sir.
What's the matter with Roberts? Didn't you signal him to keep us informed?
Yes, sir.
Well, signal him again. Tell him I want to know what progress is being made.
Aye, aye, sir.
What about you, Doctor?
I have everything organized, sir, well in hand.
Good, sit down.
After I ask the Warren a few questions, I'll be able to advise.
What kind of questions?
Well, I'll have to know the lady's age, height, weight, and physical condition. Then I must know if this is her first child, and whether or not...
The Warren makes a simple request for medical advice, and you answer with a demand for a detailed history of the lady's life?
Well, how can I give intelligent instructions if I don't know the case history?
Doctor, a short while ago, another baby was born on the Warren with the assistance of a carpenter's mate who didn't even know the patient's name. I remember now when the ship's cat had kittens you lost your head. That should have warned me.
As I reminded you, sir, I am a naval surgeon aboard a warship.
Warship or not, a woman is having a baby over on the Warren, and I'm having a nervous breakdown.
How is Mrs. Collins, Masterman?
Worse.
Too bad. I'm sorry there isn't something more we can do to help her.
There is something you can do, sir.
What?
Transfer her to the Admiral's ship. Get her in the hands of a real doctor.
That's the one thing we can't do, Masterman. We'd have to bring both the Warren and the Chattanooga to a stop. That would be inviting disaster.
You know, I keep thinking of that girl's husband inviting disaster every time he flies his plane off the deck of that carrier he's on. I'd hate to tell him that the Navy considers saving the life of his wife and baby too great a risk.
Masterman, he's doing a job. So are we.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. You can't make decisions based on sentiment or humanity.
You seem to be forgetting that the convoy is carrying hundreds of women and children and wounded men who might be placed at the mercy of the enemy. Risking the life of any one person must always be subordinated to risking the lives of many. When you achieve command, Masterman, you'll find that it'll be necessary to make many decisions that will be personally unpleasant to you. You will also find it necessary to carry out an order. And our order is to protect the left flank of this convoy.
Admiral Thomas?
Yes, Dudley?
Enemy aircraft sighted, sir.
Enemy aircraft?
Yes, sir.
Sound battle station, Dudley?
Yes, sir. Plane is approaching fast, sir.
Anti-aircraft, open fire.
Anti-aircraft, commence firing.
Why wasn't that plane sighted before, Dudley?
The plane glided in above the fog, sir. When the first sighted, he was already diving.
Find out what our damage is.
Yes, sir.
Ship's damage control officer reports our plane catapult disabled and the steering gear out of control, sir.
Huh. Well, we must do something, confound it. Can't stay here all day with my stern shut off. That plane was launched from an enemy capital ship that's somewhere out here in this blasted fog.
They're doing all they can, sir.
It's a nice kettle of fish hit in the tail with a sneak punch by a slant-eyed Beelzebub.
Enemy battleship sighted, sir.
Hmm?
Blood on the starboard bow.
I see it. Jap, Yoshimura class. Commence firing.
Aye, aye, sir. Number one and two turrets, commence firing.
Jap battleship. All my life, I've been praying for a crack at one of those pagoda-masted buzzards. And here I am, winged in the tail, sailing in circles like a blasted merry-go-round. Signal the convoy to scatter.
Aye, aye, sir.
Signal the Warren I'm out of control.
Yes, sir.
Ah. straddle us with our first salvo. Let them have it, Ludlow!
Radio from the Chattanooga, Commander Roberts. She's out of control.
Well, that puts it up to the Warren. Mr. Masterman, I'm going ahead at full speed. Tell the engine room to make smoke. We lay a smoke screen between the Jap and the convoy.
Aye, aye, sir.
We'll reverse course to the left. They've opened fire on us with their secondary batteries, sir.
Well, fire back at them.
Aye, aye, sir.
Commence firing!
The Masterman, here's my plan of attack. The enemy's course should carry him directly into the convoy.
Yes, sir.
In 2 minutes, I'm going to cease firing and reverse our course again parallel to our smoke screen. Then we'll cut through Kanan's surprise and give that Jap every torpedo we've got.
She's a battleship, sir. She'll blast us out of the water.
That's almost a certainty, Mr. Masterman.
What about the women and children? This isn't only a destroyer. It's a floating nursery.
I know that. But in a situation like this, decisions can't be influenced by personal feelings. As I've told you, when you have a command, you'll realize that. Back to your battle station, Masterman.
Aye, aye, sir.
Roberts has been hit. Hey, watch.
Are you hit badly, sir?
Masterman, it looks as if you've achieved command sooner than either of us expected.
Any orders, sir?
You know the plan of attack, Harvard. Go ahead. Rock 'em and sock 'em.
Okay, John Paul Jones. Jenks.
Get the captain below.
Aye, aye, sir.
Tell control to cease firing.
All stations, cease firing.
All stations, cease firing.
Be ready to fire torpedoes on both sides.
Aye, aye, sir. Stand by torpedoes.
Stand by torpedoes.
Mr. Lindsay, reverse course to the right. Keep a parallel and behind smoke screen.
Aye, aye, sir. Right standard rudder.
Now, Mr. Lindsay, I'm going to come right. 90 degrees, of course.
But that turn takes us back through our smoke screen, right into the face of the enemy.
Exactly. I'm going to intercept the Jap at the nearest point. You see, I'm counting on surprise.
But Mrs. Collins and the other lady, sir, and all those babies.
There's only one way of giving the convoy a chance to scatter, Lindsay. That's to come charging out of our smoke screen and smack that Jap with a couple of torpedoes before he blows us out of the water with a broadside.
But you can't throw away the lives of all those women and children.
Mr. Lindsay, the captain of a ship can't always do what he wants. If you ever get command, you'll realize that.
Yes, sir. We're about to enter the smoke screen, sir.
Steady as she goes.
Steady, sir.
Fire torpedoes when ready. Target angle 290.
Target angle 290. Stand by tubes 2 and 4. Fire 2.
Fire 2.
Fire 4.
Fire 4.
Stand by tubes 1 and 3.
Stand by tubes 1 and 3.
Fire 1.
Fire 1.
Fire 3.
Fire 3.
We hit her with the first two, sir.
Good work.
Yahoo! There go her magazines, sir!
That's fine work, Lindsay. Take over and slow to standard speed. I want to go below and see how the captain's making out.
Aye, aye, sir.
Oh. Hello, Masterman.
How are you feeling, sir?
Oh, much better, thank you. How's everything with you?
Everything's under control, sir.
Fine.
Total casualties, 12 men wounded, all taken care of.
Good.
Forward gun disabled, otherwise no serious damage. Mm-hmm. No casualties to the women and children. I think that's all, sir.
Mr. Masterman, sir. Please come with me at once. It's very urgent.
Well, Admiral Thomas?
Dr. Stone, to the best of my knowledge, we have just witnessed the greatest single destroyer action in naval history.
Magnificent, sir. If it hadn't been for the Warren, our whole convoy might have been lost.
Yes, yes. Stone, I recommissioned her.
Yes, sir.
Yes, indeed. What is it, Dudley?
Oh, a message from the Warren, sir.
Ah, yes. Yes. Gentlemen, we are living one of those moments which may go down in history. This message from the Warren may become as famous as Perry's. We have met the enemy and they are ours. So listen closely. Would you read the message from the Warren, Dudley?
Yes, sir. It's a boy. Yes, sir. Second baby arrived. It's a boy. 7 pounds, 4 ounces.
It's a boy.
It's a boy. 7 pounds, 4 ounces. Son of a gun! Well, Ludlow, just don't stand there. Begin reassembling the convoy. We're heading home!
That brings down the curtain on a great story brought to life for you by Charles Lawton, Brian Dunleavy, and Chester Morris. Thanks to you all, and to our excellent supporting cast. We'll be back in just a moment to tell you about the swell story we've prepared for you for next week. But first, a word from one of America's foremost beauty authorities, Lady Esther.
Starlight, star bright, first star I see tonight, I wish I may. But you know the rest. You used to recite that little jingle every time you made a wish on the first evening star. Remember how you'd wish you were a millionaire or a ravishing beauty? But the chances are you never stopped wishing for greater loveliness. So let me tell you how thousands of women have made that wish come true. They changed their method of skin care. Yes, they changed to Lady Esther four-purpose face cream for the complete care of their skin. And according to letter after letter I've received, these women are surprised and very much thrilled to see how much softer, smoother, how much more attractive their skin looks. You see, Lady Esther Face Cream does all this for your skin. First, it cleans your skin and cleans it thoroughly. Second, it softens your skin. Third, my face cream helps nature refine the pores. And finally, it leaves such a perfect base for powder. So if you've been wishing for a lovelier complexion, why not do as so many women have done? Change your method of beauty care. Change to Lady Esther four-purpose face cream.
Next week, the Lady Esther Screen Guild players will present the Palm Beach story. It will star Claudette Colbert, Rudy Vallee, and Randy Scott. Be sure to listen. The stars appearing on tonight's program have donated their services for the benefit of the Motion Picture Relief Fund. Charles Lawton is currently working in the Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer picture, The Man from Down Under. Brian Dunleavy can soon be seen in the United Artists production, Hangmen Also Die. Chester Morris will soon be seen in the Pine Thomas production, Aerial Gunner. Music on tonight's program was arranged and conducted by Wilbur Hatch. Adaptation by Bill Hampton. The Screen Guild players are presented every Monday night at this time by Lady Esther. To save materials, buy the larger size of Lady Esther face cream. Truman Bradley speaking. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.
That's going to do it for the Relic Radio Show this week. You can find more from the Big Story, Screen Guild Theater, past episodes of this show, all the others, thousands of old-time radio episodes available to listen to for free at RelicRadio.com. If you'd like to help support Relic Radio, help keep these shows coming every week for free, you can donate through the website as well. We've got some downloadable sets for certain donation amounts, though any amount is always helpful. Thanks to those who have helped out. Thanks for joining me today. Be back next Tuesday with another hour of the Relic Radio Show.